Hi there. My name's Andy Frazier, and welcome to this, the fourth in a series of podcasts from the British Texel Sheep Society to celebrate their 50th anniversary this year. And it's been a year of celebrations, culminating in a social weekend combined with the AGM held in Chester in November. So this is the last in a series of four, and we're going to talk now a little bit more to the modern-day Texel breeders. And firstly, we'll go back to a chat that I had with the current Breed Society chairman and president, Jeff Aitken. And Jeff, let's have a chat about your move and your role there at Proctor's Farms, because a lot of people will know you from being a highly successful flock for quite a while there. Tell us a little bit more about when you went there first.
I went to Proctor's at Sladeburn in 2009. They did have a few Texels, but we got asked to re-establish the flock and got offered the job. And we just thought it was an opportunity between working at Glenside and Hull House to sort of breed two flocks, if you know what I mean. One commercially minded and the other, and everybody's allowed to have this dream of selling a lamb at Lanark. So we did that as well. So the Proctor's flock and the Tatum Hull flock, because we moved farms during our time there over next Kirby Lonsdale to a farm called Tatum Hull. And increase the numbers.
So at Proctor's you ran two flocks there, the Proctor's and the Tatum Hall flock, and different types of sheep for different purposes, and shearlings versus lambs that way, Jeff?
With the Proctor's flock, obviously looking at your carcass and stuff, looking more flesh and head as well, and if you took that into a commercial market around here, you're sort of in a hiding to nothing really. So we had to breed what the commercial man wanted, so we went to a couple of sales at Carlisle and bought some females off Jonathan Watson, Brijon and Ted Fox. But our original yows came from Jackie and Will Forrester, Dungool flock. We bought 10. We judged a flock competition down there one year and we saw these field of gimmers and just serious tops and ends and skins on them and narrower off their heads. And Jennifer, you know, she was brought up with her father breeding very strong commercial shearling, so that was her baby, if you like. And she said, "I would like 10 of them gimmers to start the shearling flock as it is."
Okay. And you ran those flocks separately, but I mean, Proctor's is where you have been known. Obviously, everybody will know Proctor's Farms, and you hit the highlight. It won the Great Yorkshire Show in the first year, and then took the show circuit and. It's the experience that you've had before, certainly at Glenside, yeah. What have you. But you built that flock, Jeff. There's no doubt about that.
No, that's true. And we were very lucky to get our hands on Haddo Ringleader. He was a boy, I would say, that established the flock here at Proctor's. His females were outstanding, and it was them that really put us on the show circuit, winning the Great Yorkshire Show. With a ringleader daughter, so, and then a couple of years later we managed to win the Highland, and we've been reserve champion of other two times at the Highland. So,
okay,
won the Royal Welsh. We definitely won it 3 years in the trot, and then two previous years before that as well. So,
but as well as your prowess on the show circuit, of course, you went on and sold some decent and high-priced sheep. What was the top price that you had there at Proctor's?
We bought Sportsman's Batman at Carlisle. He was a serious money. It was 100,000, but again, his males and females did the job, and we managed to have a ewe lamb called Cinderella. She was breed champion, continental interbreed champion at the Great Yorkshire, and then she went on to win the Welsh, and she was actually interbreed champion at the Welsh. And the following year was a year that Double Diamond was sold, and I was lucky enough to be involved in a consortium which we then crossed with Cinderella, and we sold a lamb off of her at Lanark for 80,000, El Presidente, and another lamb that day for 52, and another one for 10,000. So,
and of course we're talking Sportsman's Double Diamond, who you bought in August 2020 for a record £350,000, and some say one of the best Texel sheep they've ever seen there, and obviously you went on and did well for yourself, Jeff.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the first the first time I saw him, I happened to go down to Charlie's to see him, and he had a very good pen of lambs that, well, very, very good pen of lambs that year, but this last lamb he puts into the ring, as he does, he was just outstanding. He had all the commercial traits, he had all the pedigree traits that you would look for in a sheep, and he's passed it on. We sold four females in lamb to him that year, and they averaged bang on 20,000 apiece. So I was sitting with another 40,000 needing to get back to break even, and we sold our first son for 80,000. So after selling our fifth sheep, we were 40,000 in profit. Yeah, so. Yeah.
As you said, bred exceptionally well, and of course went on to carry on selling semen and lambs off him for a long time afterwards as well. So that sheep came back into profit.
Yeah, he's done well for all three flocks, which is even better. Alan Blackwood, Old Houseborn, he sold one for 100,000, and the other guy sold one for 24,000. Jeff Cheard, yeah. So, and he's just a guy not long started, and fair play to him. He took a share in the top, and he's done well for him too. So, which is good. Every now and again, something special comes along, and it was his year that year. But the most important thing about that, to put out there, is that a lot of people, underbidders and buyers, they're businessmen as well as farmers, and you get all the negative feedback in the farming world about farmers spending this sort of money, but it was a lot of businessmen involved in that as well, not just farming background.
And then the Proctor's flock was dispersed in the winter of 2023, and you moved on. I had a brief chat with Alan Blackwood from the Old House Burn flock, who, of course, were a part shareholder in that ram. And Alan, we were just talking about Sportsman's Double Diamond at 350,000, and to a couple of the partners that are in there, and of course, you were one of those partners in that purchase there, and a fantastic lamb he was, and did well for all of you, I think.
He did, yeah. He bred fantastically for sons and daughters. We went up to 100,000 for a son, and his daughters sold absolutely brilliantly, and the other partners as well, 80,000 and 26,000 and 50,000. There was multiple other five figures. So, no, he did fantastically. If they all did like that, it would be a lot easier.
Yeah, and just talk about yourself there at Old House Burn. I think your Old House Burn would be more recognised originally as breeders of blackies, and then you turned to the Texels. Just tell us a little bit reason why you turned to Texel.
Yeah, we've got a good reputation with our blackies, and we do quite well with them. We run a very similar style system with a lot of embryo transfer and a lot of AI and working with these higher priced tups and whatnot. And it just seemed quite easily to translate that over to Texels. And what your eye is looking for with a blackie, you're looking very similar for a Texel. So character rules you want a good confirmation sheep, you want a correct sheep, but character is where the money is, and it's exactly the same for the blackies as it is for the Texels, in our opinion anyway. So it seemed quite easy just to transfer our skills that we had with the blackies across the Texels to do that.
Okay, and transfer your skills, and one of those skills would be finding, seeking out the best animals you can, the best female lines, obviously, but the best size too, and you got into Strathbogie Untouchable. I think about 40,000 would be one of the first tups that
with the quarter share in Untouchable. That was the first tup that we bought, and I loved Untouchable. He was such a good tup. It's amazing how things move on, but on that day at Lanark when Untouchable was sold, I just thought it was the bee's knees, you know. And we've bought a lot of good tups since, and they've all had character, you know, like a Willy Winky. You know, he was never Glenside Willy Winky. He wasn't very big, but oh my God, he looked like a cartoon. You know, he was a super top, and he bred very well, and through to Double Diamond and two or three others as well. That's you know, done very well for us. But we don't always get it right. We buy some, you know, we don't always do how like a Double Diamond did. But you know, you've just got to keep trying. You know,
Nat Bitcher said another one there, 145,000. I think that was you was part of him was in your flock, though.
Yeah, Fisher said was one of them. Came out and found Davy Dozy. He was another good one, 130,000. He bred very well. He really, really did. And his daughters are for sale this year. And they look good, to be honest with you. But whether the demand for them will be the same, because we don't have the Irish buyers as to struggle as we usually have them because of the blue tongue problem. So that curbs the market a little bit, especially for us. We've got a a lot of really good Irish customers, and they might not be to the fore this year, but it'll be okay.
Okay, and Sportsman to Star, another one that came
Sportsman
in
to
that
Star,
big
God
trade.
Almighty. Honestly, these tops, you know, they were all iconic in my mind. You know, you seen them and you just knew that you couldn't not buy it. You know, you just had to buy it. Sportsman's a Star was another one. He was a star. What a breeding top.
Well named and bred well, and I think the year after Raider top their best of the best was another one.
I know. Listen, it seems like all we do is buy six-figure tops, but you know, I'm not trying to buy them at that. It's just because they are typically, and you know, some of the better tops that they end up costing that to get. And whenever I really have a plan B, it's so hard to find one top to buy. It's very hard to find something to fall back on. So, said it before, it's like a trap. You know, you just have to buy that top. You don't really have an awful lot of option because you're not coming back out to think, I'll just buy the next one I like. Because there probably isn't another one that I like.
It shows what a good eye you have there, Alan, and you and your father. What a good eye you have when you pick the tops out, and then they end up being the deer tops. So, yeah, that's obviously put you on the map. And what number of females do you run there at Old Houseburn with the Texels?
We're running about 40 donor ewes. We try to keep it about that number. It just suits the size of our setup, how we can lamb. We want a couple of hundred Texel lambs every year. They'll all be embryos, but we want about 200 lambs a year if we can, to give us about 100 tops to draw from, and maybe allow us to sell up to that number, maybe 50, 60, 70 gimmers every year, which we sell all in lamb. In December, we sell very few through the summer. We keep them typically all to the back end and sell them in lamb because we're, again, usually buying some of the better tops. It makes them quite attractive to buyers if they're in lamb to some of the better tops. So,
Of
can
course,
add
it will
that.
do, and that'll be your first opportunity, of course, to recoup a bit of money if you can sell some of those inland gimmers there already. That helps you bring a bit of cash flow back into them too.
It's nice. Listen, it's not all about the money, but the gimmers, it is quite a profitable system if you get the tops that breed well. I mean, there's no denying it, especially with the gimmers, they can do very well. But you've got to sell the good ones. You know, nobody wants to buy them anymore, but it's something you don't want to sell. You know, typically it's something that I grudge to sell them, but it's, those are the females that people want to buy. So you've just got to go on with it and try and buy something to replace it with, and keep buying the best tops, and just keep feeding the system to replace what you're selling out of it.
Robbie Wilson talks about some of the more recent sires that have influenced the Milnbank flock. And another ram I mentioned was Teaglim Tornado. Was he 60,000, that one? A big spender, big
Yeah,
spend on him again.
yeah, he was 60,000. Yeah, he did a good job for me, him.
Mm-hmm.
And that I shared him with a few other guys. I had the biggest share of him. I kept the semen rights and that. I sold his first son for 40,000 Milbank, You're the Boy.
Okay.
And that year I sold You're the Boy. I sold 600 does of semen off him at £60 a doe. So
nice.
He paid me well, that ram. He did a good job, Tornado. Yeah. A lot of my sheep were back to him in the flock. You know, he'd been back breeding a lot of my ewes. He was a big ram in Lanark that day, a big massive boy, powerful guy. Did a good job.
A lot of your income at Milnbank, of course, would come from selling females, Robbie.
Yeah, I do. I sell a lot of females. I sell over 100 females a year now.
Yeah.
All over. I sell a lot of ram lambs as well. Like, I sold 130 ram lambs last year. I've got 320 pedigree Texel lambs tagged this year already, so we have a lot of lambs in the ground.
And a lot of those, of course, will be ET lambs. So what kind of numbers of flesh of ewes do you run altogether?
I've only got 25 ewes. The rest is all embryo work.
And that's the easy way forward. I know it's maybe not the cheapest way because the lambs are hitting the ground at a bit of money, but that's a lot of people doing the same thing there, Robbie, with sort of smaller flocks and just and piling the embryos out there. Is it the right way?
Yeah. Oh, I think it is. Yeah. You're flushing the elite ones out the flock, and yeah, definitely the best way. I find it anyway. It's a modern world, embryo transfer.
I was previously talking to Donald McPherson of the Hexall flock about how his ET program works for him.
I'm not saying that ET is right. It's just right for us. We've got a very small acreage, so we need to get twin lambs out of every cross yow. So what we do is we sell any cross yows that have not held their embryos. in lamb, so we're only lambing pure ewes. Okay. So we only have roughly 80 to 100 lambs born every year, okay. Roughly. Okay. Just because we don't have space for them. We've only got 100 acres here. So.
And what number of ewes do you pull those out of?
12 to 14. Okay. That's all. Okay. And we just try and keep it tight. The terminal sire traits have been greatly enhanced by using ET, I would say. The sheep are totally different now, and I think the sheep are miles better than they used to be. The Texel breed as a whole.
Later in the year, Donald would go on to judge Lanark Sale, and not only judge it, but also have the top price with his lamb, Hexel High Voltage, at 70,000 guineas. A while ago, I had a chat with the late Albert Howie about some of the influential tups that have come out of the Knock stable. Another ram I want to mention is a ram called Knock Yardsman, and he was cheap at about 15,000. He went to the Clarks, didn't he, Edgar and Gower, and Pandas, the rest of the Clarks there, and Teaglam, and he's probably one of the most successful sires of all time, I'd say, Knock Yardsman, and he probably wouldn't be the most expensive one you've sold.
Well, it is important if your stuff does well with people, and it's pleasing to see some people getting good prices for some of our sons.
And another sire more recently was Knock Bantastic. He was the sire of the year in 2019, and he sired, he went to Midlock and Clarks again, and yeah. He was the sire of for the £200,000 Midlock Capaldi.
Correct, uh-huh. Yep.
And then you took a decision to sell the entire Knock flock, which of course went to Willie Davis down there at Usk Vale.
Well, I was surprised at George. He sold the very good an offer that he couldn't refuse, apparently. But because he's a bit in charge now, because I'm quite an old man, Andy, you know. Yeah. But I'm not disappointed, because it was right in the middle of harvest, and I see he was just having too much work with it. And we had two men on the farm, which was not a lot for 1,000 acres, but we just had two men, and we managed. There was one who was a good lad left, and we couldn't find another guy, so. He made a decision to sell them anyway, and I think it was the right decision at the time, possibly.
So I spoke to Willie Davis from the Usk Vale flock.
I was friendly with George Howie, and he mentioned probably a year or so previous that he was maybe thinking of selling the sheep. And then we approached him that year that I went to Bilf, if he was still interested. I asked a question. I didn't hear back from him for a good couple of months. And then out of the blue, he came back and said yes. And what he was looking for, then we were very fortunate enough to be able to do a deal with George for his Knock flock.
The entire flock you bought, how many was there?
I think there was about 12 ewes, 20-something gimmers, and 20-something ewe lambs. And then there were 60 recipients as well that we had from him.
Okay, I mean, that's a tremendous investment, but a tremendous flock of sheep that, you know, the Howies have always been at the top of the game, and you know, I've written about some of this, the way that the Knock flock have gone on there. So you brought some great genetics back down, and that obviously really stood you in good stead.
Of course, yes. I mean, there's great history to the flock, and it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so we can't thank George enough for the opportunity that he gave us.
And Willie, when had you got started with the Texels?
It would have been about 2014, 2015 when I first got into the Texels.
Uh-huh. And a ram that put you on the map, I think a ram called Hexel, Born to be Wild, from Donald McPherson.
Yes, no, we were very lucky enough to get a share in him that day. I'd seen the lamb in Lanark the night before, fell in love with him. Never in a million years did I think we'd be able to buy him. Didn't even try and get a team together to buy him, because I thought he was going to surpass what I was ever going to be able to pay. And he went in the ring, and very lucky, followed him out. The Knox boys at Haddo's bought him, went to them. Would there be any chance of buying a share? Didn't think they'd say yes, so he very kindly did. And then Donald also then came to us asking if he could retain a share. And yes, yeah, very lucky for that. Okay.
That's great, isn't it? How the Texel Sheep Society, the people within the society we talk about a lot, how friendly they are and encouraging they are to youngsters there to let you have that leg up.
Oh, for sure. I wasn't very old at the time, and they had no real need to let me in, but they did, and that really set me off. So I'm forever grateful for them. Good. To them for that.
And you weren't long. You went on there and sold a ram, Usk Vale Cheeky Charlie, at 36,000. I mean, that set you up.
Yes, I mean, that year really got me going in the Texels, and the and the sheep game itself, really. I mean, I wouldn't be able to been able to afford to buy the recips or get going in the Texels if it wasn't for that year. I think we had six lambs to average over 20,000 that year, and it was quite mind blowing. I wasn't very old at the time. I managed to buy recips after that, a couple more Texel ewes, and managed to take on some more rented ground. So it really set me off.
You think you had the top price at Worcester as well that year with the lamb by Comov Velvet Jacket, is that right?
He was out of a Velvet Jacket mother, so he was Champagne Charlie by Born to be Wild, and then his full brother also popped Carlisle that year. So yeah, it was on the bounce, really. Never forget that year.
I'm going to say a great year to remember, and then you went on with that, and just talk us through a little bit about your partnership there with Paul.
So yes, I had great support from my father when I got going, in the sense of allowing me to use some of his land at home, and I'd be looking after his sheep in repayment for that, and sort of grew the sheep organically, really, and then took on different bits of ground here, there, and everywhere back near home, and we got to a stage where we were looking to rent a farm. I think I'd written a letter and sent it out to land agents from to the north of Scotland to the south of England in hope that we'd be able to find a farm to rent. And it was actually through a mutual connection of Sophia's father that he knew Paul and mentioned what we were looking to do to rent a farm. And it was Paul then came to us, wanted to know if we'd go into partnership. He didn't want to rent the farm out. I was a bit hesitant at first, to be honest with you. I'd always done it on my own, but the opportunity he was offering and the ground and the farm that they had there, we couldn't really say no. So we then moved to Bilthin in 2021, I think it was.
And you carried on producing top lambs, and then we reached 2023 and dispersed the flock. Just talk us a little bit through what went on there, Willie.
So I think opportunities from both sides really arose. Sophia and I got an opportunity that we could never turn down of a farm back near home to rent. And Paul had other interests, so I think it was a natural progression really for us.
And the dispersal sale, a tremendous success, one of the best sales we've seen in the last decade or so, and topped it with 45,000 guineas for a breed record, I think, for an older ewe, and she was one you'd bought in, I think.
Yes, I mean, we can't thank everyone enough for the support of the sale. It absolutely surpassed any expectations. So a big thank you to everyone that came to the sale, supported the sale in every way. The cowl ewe, yes, she's quite something, really. We purchased her the year before in Worcester. 3,000, I think, we paid for her. And there was just something about her that day. I've never been able to afford the real high price ewes, and you like to try and find something that you see a bit of potential in. And her first crop of lambs were fantastic. We sold some tremendous top lambs to Ireland that year out of her, and I think she had two lambs in the sale, one at 10 or 12,000, one at 6,000. And yeah, she was a bit of a star for us. We were very lucky.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, well done. It's nice that you can turn a profit on something. It shows what a good eye you've got there, Willie, if you can pick one up at 3,000 and sell it on for 45,000. We all wish you could do that. During this season of podcasts, we've talked a lot about the Scottish National Sale at Lanark, and I think Gordon Gray sums it up quite well.
The Lanark Sale itself, it's just something else. I mean, they may say Old Trafford's the theatre of dreams, but it's Lanark that dreams are realised in the Texel world, or in most cases shattered. You know, we've had world records at Lanark, and many go home with their dreams in tatters. But for most breeders, they would like to come to Lanark and sell a lamb or two. And although the numbers have dropped a bit now, there's still that same excitement come the third week in August.
Brian Ross, manager of the Lanark Livestock Market and a director of Laurie and Symington, a man who knows a lot about Texels there, summed up the Lanark sale and the breed with this. So Brian, Lanark has very much been the home of the Texel breed pretty much since in those 50 years.
Yeah, it has. This was where it was incepted back in 1973 or 1974 from the three men. Student that sat in the dairy ring at Lanark and decided they wanted to bring some of these sheep in.
And because of that, maybe, or maybe not because of that, that Lanark Market has become the pinnacle, I suppose, the Scottish national sale, the main sale in the country. And one or two people have said, because the buzz about there is fantastic. But sales like that didn't happen overnight and by accident, did they?
No. I mean, I think the first sale would have been 76 or 77 from memory, although I wasn't here at that time. But it's always been the home of the Texel. And, you know, the Texel would grow from this area, that all the commercial farmers in this area would buy into the breed, and it would just grow from there. And Lanark has been the home of the Texel, really, as far as the main sales are concerned.
And you've certainly been the mastermind behind certainly taking that sale forward to where it is now, as I said, the pinnacle of the breed in Europe, I suppose. And you put a lot of effort in there, know a lot of breeders, know a lot about the breed yourself, Brian.
Yeah, well, having an interest in it is a great help. And, you know, I've been here since 1978, but involved in the Texel more early 80s. And really started selling on a regular basis, I would say, from the late 80s. And got an interest in and looked at the breed and what it could do to the commercial industry. And it's been a huge success.
And it's been a success right the way down as well. People could bring lambs to Lanark, not just necessarily get the high flyers. Gordon Gray had pointed out that sometimes somebody will come for the first time there and go and hit a big trade there. It's not just about the names as well, is it? It's about the people.
The great thing about the Texel breed to me is that if you have the lamb, no matter who you are, you'll get a trade for it. I mean, James Porter this year got 45,000, you know, of Saltcoats. You know, he's done well, but to reach those pinnacles, he brought the good lamb because he knew he could get the value for it in Lanark.
And you've taken a little bit of a hit this year, of course, with the Irish not coming over there. That's affected the trade a wee bit.
It has affected the trade with the Blue Tongue, and, you know, they're desperate to get sheep in, but they just can't do it. And it's not affected the Texels, it's affected all breeds of sheep. And it will have an effect for the next couple of years until we possibly get this all sorted out with Blue Tongue.
And we go back to some of those high-flying prices. It must make your mouth water when you see lambs like the Sportsman Double Diamond coming in there in the ring and knowing that the trade is going to be there with them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Diamond was a high... The only one regret with Diamond was the fact that the COVID year and we didn't have the huge atmosphere within that ring we have in Lanark. But, I mean, it was the build-up towards them and, you know, it was a great buzz to be honoured to sell that sheep. You know, that sort of money. You know, we've had a lot of good high flying prices over the years. You know, you can go right back to early 2000s and Top Hill Joe was sold for 122,000. So what's he worth in today's terms?
That's very true. And has there been, obviously, the anticipation when a lamb is that good that everybody knows it's going to hit the trade? Has there been a few surprises over the years? Has there been a lamb turned up you thought, well, I didn't see that one coming?
Well, not really. There's always got that talk. And I mean, you know, you get through the pens in the morning and you can always get the buzz in the morning of where the action's going to happen. If you do your homework and go round the pens and speak to the right person, you know where it's coming from. You do know.
And just sum up the Lanark sale for me then. As I said, Gordon Gray mentioned the atmosphere being electric there, and it is, isn't it? It's just it's like something like no other.
No, it's like no other. I mean, it's just the atmosphere that can be created within Lanark. When we moved to our new premises, they all said, you'll never get that atmosphere in Lanark again, but we have. We've reenacted it here in the new mark, and it's a great buzz. The people that's there make it the buzz as well. I don't think you'll get the atmosphere anywhere else. It's a great buzz for me to sell.